KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
But ladies and gentlemen, sometimes the memory hole is a good place to be. It occurs to me that might be the case right now, right here, right now, as we stumble, dance, wriggle our way into what now appears to be war alongside Israel with a little place called Iran. But the dialogue about that situation has powerful, deep echoes in the relatively distant past. Case in point, we are told that we're shown tape of the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, testifying before Senate Intel Committee last March that the intelligence community rated Iran as not yet having a program to build a nuclear bomb. And now that intelligence, so-called, is being derided by her boss, the felon in chief. As I say, it has echoes and reminiscences of things of the recent past. The last time the United States got involved in a war in that part of the world, you may recall, was in a similarly named country, Iraq. Yeah, we traded the Q for the N, but Iraq. Now, the cute part about that is that for years, almost a decade, Iraq had been at war with Iran. And the two countries did a pretty good job of beating each other up and were pretty much in a resultant stalemate when the United States decided to get involved in Iraq. The result of that, of course, was that Iraq was kind of devastated, and that resulted in the strengthening of its regional rival, Iran. See how this works? Anyway, as we stumbled into the Iraq War, there was a big debate about, guess what? Intelligence. We were told that the intelligence indicated that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. That intelligence was peddled by one vice president of the United States. And there was one dissenting intelligence agency that reported that Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and we should behave accordingly. That intelligence agency was located inside the State Department, whose head, Colin Powell, then ignored that intelligence and delivered a speech before the United Nations saying Iraq had WMD. And by the way, assisting Dick Cheney in peddling that false intelligence was a gentleman who got famous for a little while by the name of Ahmad Chalabi. He wanted to be the new head of Iraq, and he thought the way to do that was to get the United States to kick out Saddam Hussein. So maybe with that information in mind, we can conclude at least there's a possibility that Benjamin Netanyahu is this year's Ahmad Chalabi. Hello, welcome to the show.
Summer days, oh summer days.
Happy summertime, everybody, from Santa Monica, California. No riots here. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now...
Looks like must close.
Well, looks like a certain Mr. Musk didn't get back to work soon enough. SpaceX's Starship rocket exploded before even leaving the Earth this week. Latest setback happened just before a planned static fire. The rocket was fueled ahead of a test firing of its Raptor engines, but abruptly exploded. The explosion occurred on a test stand. It's unclear how much damage the facility sustained. According to SpaceX, quote, a safety clear area around the site was maintained throughout the operation, and all personnel are safe and accounted for, unquote. The vehicle was being prepared for the 10th test flight of the full Starship stack. The 33 Raptor engines of the Super Heavy booster had already performed a full-duration static fire earlier this month. SpaceX called the incident a major anomaly. I think he's one of the officials involved. From video footage, the anomaly appeared to begin with a rupture of a vent, a venting event at the top of Starship before the entire vehicle went. SpaceX has yet to provide more details. Musk has been unusually quiet on X. In May, he had suggested Starships might land on Mars next year. Didn't say whether they would be intact. NASA also depends on the vehicle to return humans to the moon in 2027. The explosion follows three unsuccessful test flights of the vehicle, two in which the Starship exploded during the launch phase, might as well get it out of the way, and the last in which the vehicle lost attitude control, that would be good for Elon right about now, and was destroyed during re-entry. Maybe he should go back to Doge. He didn't fail enough at that, did he? News of Musk love. Now news of the godly. And bless them. This according to the Diocese of Buffalo Chief Operating Officer Richard Sushan. Quote, we really can never sufficiently apologize enough for the devastation that was caused to victims of the sex abuse situation, especially to those victims that were victimized under our watch. He wasn't wearing it. No, I said. The diocese is working to finalize a $150 million settlement for more than 800 victims. Of that, $110 million is expected to come from the parishes in the Buffalo, New York area, 160 of them. This settlement is an attempt to provide some level of justice and restitution to these victims, Sushan said. It's a terrible, inexcusable, and unacceptable chapter in our history, and we, as the Catholic family of Western New York, bear the responsibility for our part in this travesty, unquote. Contributions will vary widely between parishes. Quote, the disparity is really relative to what they hold on their balance sheet as unrestricted assets, Sushan continued, now entering a financial phase. Another parish that may have a higher expected contribution may have a situation where they do not have donor-restricted gifts, and therefore they have more exposure. Unquote, he said the diocese have been transparent throughout the bankruptcy process. Quote, there is not a request that they, the court or creditors, have made that we have not eventually fulfilled, unquote. According to the diocese, the financial data used to determine each parish's share was self-reported. Contributions are due by the middle of next month. At that point, the diocese will have fulfilled its commitment for its cash contribution, and we expect the parishes and our affiliates to have done the same, said the chief operating officer of the Buffalo Diocese. A local TV reporter asked him, how do we justify asking parishioners to pay for the sins and what some parishioners have even called failure of church leadership. He responded, quote, "It's important for individuals asking that question or contemplating that question that they recognize that the church is a collective. It's not one individual versus another. And this is a very post-Vatican II kind of realization. Our church it's global. Our church is inclusive of laity. It is not cleric versus laity. The claims are not just clerical claims. They involve lay employees, lay volunteers, and it becomes therefore our collective responsibility as church, living our gospel values, to fulfill this obligation." Unquote. From the Nice Try Department. And this from The Guardian. As the members of the Catholic organization wrapped up their speech with an appeal for forgiveness, this is in Spain, the auditorium in Madrid exploded in rage. For decades, many in the audience had grappled with the scars left by their time in Catholic-run institutions. Now they were on their feet chanting truth, justice, and reparations, and never forget nor forgive. It was an unprecedented response to an unprecedented moment in Spain, hinting at the deep fissures that linger over one of the longest-running and least-known institutions of Francisco Franco's dictatorship, the Catholic-run centers that incarcerated thousands of women and girls as young as 8, subjecting them to barbaric punishments, forced labor, and, of course, religious indoctrination. You got to have that. The centers operated under the direction of the Women's Protection Board, a state-run institution. They aimed to rehabilitate, quote, fallen women, unquote, aged 15 to 25, as well as others deemed to be at risk of deviating from the narrow path marked out for women during the Franco dictatorship. Survivors describe a reality that was far more brutal. It was the greatest atrocity Spain has committed against women, said one, who was drugged by a doctor at her home in Barcelona and taken to a center in Madrid at the age of 16. Her family branded her rebellious after she attended rallies against the dictatorship. The centers, which are believed to have held more than 40,000 young women and girls at their peak, weren't closed until 1985, 10 years after Franco's death. He's still dead, by the way. Amid pressure from survivors and after more than a year of investigating their claims, Confer, a Catholic body representing more than 400 congregations, including many with ties to the centers, said it was ready to seek forgiveness for what had happened. "We acknowledge this page in our history," said Jesus Diaz Sariego. Not Jose. "This is an example, this is an exercise in moral and historical responsibility, an opportunity to acknowledge what we did not do well in the past and express our empathy and deep sorrow to all these women." Just an example of what went on. His remarks were followed by an audio compilation of survivor testimonies. Some spoke of wrestling with abuse by nuns when they were just 8 or 11 years old. Others told of punishments that ranged from rubbing nettles on the vulvas of those who wet the bed to forcing people to eat their own puke or draw crosses on the floor with their tongues. News of the godly. And now, as Paul Harvey used to say, wash your ears out with this. News of a crypto winner. Alex Lab, a Bitcoin decentralized finance protocol on the Stacks blockchain, my favorite blockchain, by the way, said it would completely reimburse its users using treasury funds after an $8.3 million exploit a couple of weeks ago. The protocol's native token dropped 45% in response to the exploit, which the Alex team blamed on a flaw in the protocol's smart contract logic. That's first place I'd look. Alex Lab was previously exploited in May last year for $4.5 million in an attack it blamed on North Korea's Lazarus Group. The recovery process from that attack is still incomplete. The protocol said on X it would reimburse affected users 100% using funds from its treasury, but users had only 3 days to complete the claim form to receive their funds. The price of Alex Lab's token dropped precipitously following the exploit, according to CoinGecko, data. It is a crypto winner.
Last night I had the strangest dream. It was about the ultimate Ponzi scheme. All the way through there were signs of trouble, but someone was blowing one hell of a bubble. You gave up your dollars for something new. As long as it stayed on the screen, it grew. But when you tried to cash in, the value would vanish. Like reading your latest phone bill in Spanish. Folks had warned me it was some kind of crypto, but there was no sure thing like a sky full of crypto. Money ill spent. Then Trump got involved and it had a new spurt. You could buy a fine hat, but you'd still lose your shirt. For the wealthy, it was something the cops could not seize. For the normies, it was a rerun of NFTs. For the unwary, it was an elaborate trapto. For the savvy, it was 19 kinds of crapto. Before you could catch up, they'd pull off a flipto. Nothing says dreaming like the promise of crypto. It's a dizzying feeling, like standing on tiptoe. Someone else is making a killing with crypto.
Drop on by at the summer place. The
It's LeShow from Santa Monica. And speaking of Southern California, time for news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. From the Los Angeles Times. Yes, there's... In a sprawling county where transit lines are sometimes miles apart, transit leaders' plans for the 2028 Olympics rely on a robust fleet of buses to get people to and from venues and avoid a traffic meltdown. The plan hinges on a $2 billion ask of the Trump administration. Yeah, that's a good idea. To lease 2,700 buses to join the fleet of roughly 2,400, traveling on a network of designated lanes to get from venue to venue. But with roughly 3 years to go till opening day, the plan faces several challenges over funding and time. The federal government has yet to respond to the city's request, and the commitment to lease clean energy buses could pose supply problems and challenges around charging infrastructure. Operators would also need to be trained under state regulations and provided housings during the games. Quote, 3 years might seem like a lot of time to most of us, but in municipal time, 3 years is like the blink of an eye, said Daniel Rodman, a member of the city's Office of Major Events. Father time, he adds, is coming, unquote. The games will be scattered in places across the region. Since many of these venues aren't directly accessible by rail, the bus system will be key to the city's push for transit first. That's a motto that city leaders have adopted since the mayor's previous messaging around a car-free Olympics. Not a free car Olympics. That would, quote, there's a mountain to be moved, and if you move it 1 year, it's a lot harder than in 3 years, said Wayne Matute, deputy director of UCLA's Transportation Studies Institute. The buses are hard enough to get, but all these policy and regulatory changes may be hard as well. Hello, Rio. Hello, Beijing. Hello, Sydney. Hello, Paris. Could you take it? It's the Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day! Now here's Ralph.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip, hip, hooray.
Well, that's some hip, hip, hooray in there, baby. Google is reportedly using its expansive library of YouTube videos to train its AI models, your Gemini, your VO3, shocking many content creators. This is from petapixel.com. Last month, Google launched its latest AI video model, VO3, positioning it as one of the most advanced AI video generators on the market. Stunning viewers with the incredibly impressive synthetic videos generated from it. I didn't use that. I used ChatGPT to... Well, I wanted to summon up what I called the picture of the three, what I called the three stars of this Spinal Tap in a situation. And what ChatGPT got me was three other people. Quote, according to a report by CNBC, Google is tapping into YouTube's library of 20 billion videos to train its AI models. The news outlet cited a source not authorized to speak publicly about the matter. Google later confirmed that it does use YouTube videos to train its AI. It says it only relies on a subset of content and adheres to specific agreements with creators and media partners. Quote, we've always used YouTube content to make our products better. And this hasn't changed with the advent of the AI, said a YouTube spokesperson. Quoting again, we also recognize the need for guardrails, which is why we've invested in robust protections that allow creators to protect their image and likeness in the AI era. Unquote. While YouTube says it has previously disclosed this practice, many creators and media organizations remain unaware that Google is using its video library to train AI models. Creators interviewed by CNBC say they had not been informed or consulted and were caught off guard by the revelation. Well, that's revelation. That's what revelations are supposed to do. When uploading a video to the platform, the user is agreeing that YouTube has a broad license to the content. But while YouTube allows creators to opt out of third-party AI training by your Amazon, your Apple, and your NVIDIA, they reportedly cannot prevent Google from using their videos, the creators, that is, to train its own models. YouTube has not disclosed how many of its 20 billion videos, I said 20 billion videos, are used for AI training. However, experts cited by CNBC note that even using just 1% of the library would provide around 2.3 billion minutes of footage. That's more than 40 times the volume of training data reportedly used by rival AI models. Digital rights advocates, you may know, argued that years of work by YouTube creators are being used to develop AI systems without their consent or their compensation. Quote, we've seen a growing number of creators discover fake versions of themselves circulating across platforms. New tools like VO3 are only going to accelerate the trend, says the CEO of one creative company. The latest news comes after Disney and Universal filed a joint lawsuit against a generative AI company, Midjourney, accusing it of widespread copyright infringement. The bad news is I'm going to have to root for Disney. Jefferson Parish, Louisiana Sheriff Joe Lopinto's office has agreed to pay six figures to a Georgia man who was jailed for nearly a week over a bad identification that used facial recognition technology. The $200,000 payout to Randall Curran Reed was sealed last month in federal court in New Orleans, according to a transcript seen by NOLA.com. It resolves a civil rights lawsuit that Reed, 31, filed against the sheriff's office over his arrest in DeKalb County, Georgia, on a warrant signed by a Jefferson Parish judge. Paul Schneider? Reed was accused of helping steal thousands of dollars in high-end purses from a suburban New Orleans consignment shop. He was pulled over outside Atlanta on the day after Thanksgiving a couple of years ago, remained in jail for 6 days, clueless about the crime, he said then. They told me I had a warrant out of Jefferson Parish. I said, what is Jefferson Parish? Hey, you're not the only one to ask. Reed told the Times-Picayune in 2022, I've never been to Louisiana a day in my life, unquote. In his lawsuit, Reed accused the sheriff and the sheriff's detective of violating his rights by failing to verify a match flagged by Clearview AI, the facial recognition provider that was enlisted by the sheriff's office a couple years ago. Under a $25,000 contract, a Baton Rouge police detective borrowed the identification of Reed to secure another arrest warrant against him, alleging a similar crime at a shop on a local highway. The thieves allegedly stole well over $10,000 in Chanel and Louis Vuitton purses. Reed insisted he wasn't one of them. His attorney in Louisiana said he alerted the sheriff's office to physical differences between Reed and the purse thief seen on camera. The sheriff's office rescinded the warrants, and Reed left the jail. He then sued for negligence, false arrest, and malevolent prosecution. A lawsuit started in Georgia but was transferred to New Orleans. He claimed The sheriff had failed to establish a policy and a training for facial recognition. The sheriff's office didn't respond to a request for comment. But it looked like the sheriff. Critics point to research that has shown higher rates of bad facial recognition matches for some populations, including black people. It's unclear if the racial bias identified in those systems has lessened since the arrest of Reed more than 2 years ago. You'd be interested to know. He is black. Clearview AI, one of the most prominent facial recognition providers for law enforcement, scrapes billions of images from public sites such as YouTube and Facebook to amass its capabilities. And a related story, two companies backed by Bill Gates and Sam Altman, he's the head of OpenAI, have raised more than $1 billion amidst a surge in investor opinion and optimism that nuclear energy will help power the artificial intelligence revolution. This according to the Financial Times. Terra Power, a private company founded by Gates, says it has raised more than half a billion from investors, including attracting funding for the first time from the venture capital arm of NVIDIA, which makes chips. That sounds invidious. It follows a $460 million equity raise closed this week by Oklo. This is a firm backed by Sam Altman of OpenAI. It is a developer of small modular reactors, a new type of nuclear reactor that generates about a third or less power of standard models. Analysts said companies are capitalizing on a positive funding environment created by the recent deals struck by Google, Meta, and Microsoft with nuclear developers and government support. There's that government again. I thought we were shrinking it. Chris Levesque, Terra Power's chief executive, told the Financial Times the funding was further proof that nuclear technology would be an important source of the power that industry needs for AI. Terra Power has raised more than $2 billion in private financing, won a $2 billion grant from the U.S., say with me now, government, to co-fund the design and construction of its first nuclear reactor in Kemmerer, Wyoming, which is cooled by liquid sodium rather than water. No indication in this story what they intend to do with the waste. I guess they'll ask AI.
Direct from the White House, where we're having meetings so important that Tulsi Gabbard isn't allowed to attend, is your favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Postage Stamps. You can get them from me, but the post office has to honor them. As you've probably misheard from the fake media, we're having meetings this weekend about the conflict between Israel and Iran. But the legacy lunatics couldn't help themselves. They started a fake ruckus, what I call a fakus, about my latest Iran policy, the one I came up with midweek. It said that before I made any decision on what we should or shouldn't or should do to help what Israel will or won't or will do, the Ayatollah, I call him the Ayatollah, has 2 weeks to negotiate. And the idiots in the press room couldn't wait to point out that 2 weeks was an interval I had used before. Like I once said I'd have a new plan to replace Obamacare in 2 weeks, or I'd set a trade deal with China in 2 weeks. All of a sudden, to the jerks in press row, I was a two-week-aholic. In fact, of course, their memories are shorter than something else where they suffer shortcomings. Last year, while running for president, I said many times that certain things, like an end to the war in Ukraine or a reduction in food prices, would happen on day one of my new administration, the best one in history, by the way. And so the degenerates in the media missed the point that 2 weeks is nothing more or less than the new day one. It's your favorite president's favorite way of saying soon. It's code. It's poetry. It's a stick figure of speech. If the media midgets don't like the way the president of the United States talks, they should ask all the leaders of the free world why they hold me in such high esteemship. I promise you this, they'd be in for a big surprise. And that may well happen in a couple of weeks. Till next time, stay loyal. It's the best way to be.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Gasoline. Electricity free and more gallons to the gallon. So long.
And now...
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
Well, you can't think about it if you don't know about it. This from Agence France-Presse.
Ah, the French.
That's the one. Drinks in glass bottles had 5 to 50 times more microplastic fragments than drinks in plastic bottles. Drinks including water, soda, beer, and wine sold in glass bottles contain more microplastics than those in plastic bottles, according to a surprising study released by France's Food Safety Agency this week. Researchers have detected the tiny, mostly invisible pieces of plastic throughout the world. As you know, there's still no direct evidence that this preponderance of plastic is harmful to human health, but a burgeoning field of research, haven't used that word in a while since I worked for Newsweek, burgeoning, is aiming to measure its spread. Guillaume Duflo, research director at the French Food Safety Agency, says the team sought to investigate the quantity of microplastics in different types of drinks sold in France and examined the different impact different containers can have. Unquote. The researchers found an average of around 100 microplastic particles per liter in glass bottles of soft drinks, lemonade, iced tea, and beer. That was 5 to 50 times higher than the rate detected in plastic bottles or your metal cans. Quote, we expected the opposite result. Unquote. PhD student Islin Shaib, who conducted the research. Continuing, quote, we then noticed that in the glass, the particles emerging from the samples were the same shape, color, and polymer composition, so therefore the same plastic, as the paint on the outside of the caps that seal the glass bottles, she said. The paint on the caps also had, quote, tiny scratches invisible to the naked eye, probably due to friction between the caps when they were stored. That's from the agency statement. This could then release particles onto the surface of the caps for water, both flat and sparkling. The amount of microplastic was relatively low in all cases. Wine also contained few microplastics, even glass bottles with caps. The reason for this discrepancy, said the researcher, remains to be explained. But soft drinks contained around 30 microplastics per liter. Because there's no reference level for a potentially toxic amount of microplastics, drink up. No, it was not possible to say whether these figures represent a health risk. That's from the French Health Agency. But drink manufacturers could easily reduce the amount of microplastics shed by bottle caps, said the agency. It tested a cleaning method involving blowing the caps. That sounds like fun. Oh, blowing the caps with air, then rinsing them with water and alcohol. That reduced contamination by 60%. And people who live in U.S. coastal communities near heavily polluted waters, like Santa Monica, may face higher risks of type 2 diabetes, stroke, and coronary artery disease. That's according to researchers who analyzed ocean plastic levels and county health data. The analysis focused on counties bordered by ocean waters with high concentrations of microplastics. This risk was higher compared to residents of coastal counties with low levels of microplastic pollution in nearby waters. That's according to new research published this week in the Journal of the American Heart Association. What do they know? This is one of the first large-scale studies to suggest that living near waters heavily polluted with microplastics may be linked to chronic health conditions. Plastic pollution is not just an environmental issue, it may also be a public health issue. That's the quote from Dr. Sarju Ganatra, not Nancy Ganatra, senior author of the study and medical director of sustainability at Lehi Hospital and Medical Center in Massachusetts. By the numbers, comparing counties with very high versus very low microplastic pollution, nearby, researchers found that residents in the most polluted areas had an 18% higher rate of type 2 diabetes, a 7% higher rate of coronary artery disease, and 9% more strokes. but they were good strokes. One word, microelastics. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, when it comes to Wyndham Clark, the talk has been recently about more about his on-course antics rather than the play of the former U.S. Open golf champion. He opened a 6-under 64 Thursday at the Travelers Championship. And while he was asked a couple questions about his play, it didn't take long for the discussion to turn to 6 days ago when Clark damaged lockers inside the clubhouse at Oakmont after missing the cut. It was the second incident in his many major tournaments this season of causing damage. At the PGA Championship in May, he caused damage to a T-Mobile sign. This week, Clark apologized for what happened at the U.S. Open. Quote, I've had a lot of highs and lows in my career, especially this year, some lows. I made a mistake that I deeply regret. I'm very sorry for what happened. But, he said, I'd also like to move on, not only for myself, but for Oakmont, for the U.S. Golf Association, and kind of focus on the rest of this year and things that come up. So I'm starting to move on and focus on those things, unquote. Almost an apology, I guess. This from the Telegraph, the British newspaper. Quote, on May 25, we published an online article. We earn $463,000, but soaring private school fees mean we can't go on 5 holidays, unquote. That was a story, which included stock photographs and not, as the article indicated, images of the family referred to in the article. In addition, we have not been able to verify the details we published. There has been public speculation the story was created using artificial intelligence. This is not the case. We apologize to our readers for these errors, which should not have occurred. Unquote. I guess they're saying, we can screw up just as well as AI. Tucker Carlson phoned Donald Trump and expressed remorse for some of his recent comments about the conflict in Iran. You have seen some of those back and forth. The president disclosed Wednesday when asked about the right-wing podcaster. Quote, Tucker's a nice guy. He called and apologized the other day because he thought he said things that were a little bit too strong. And I appreciated that. Unquote. And the BBC, yes, it's the BBC's apology of the week, has been forced to apologize following claims by its Arabic service that Jews spit on Christians in a holiday ritual. Claims were made in a video released by the BBC alongside an article titled Sukkot, Spitting an Assault on Christians and Harassment of Muslims on the Jewish Holiday. In the video, released a couple of years ago, caption claimed observant Jews celebrated their religious holiday, Sukkot, in Israel by spitting on Christians. After the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting and Analysis complained to the broadcaster, it was quickly corrected to, quote, some observant Jews consider spitting on Christians a holiday ritual, unquote. It took 19 months for a formal response to be issued. In the correspondence, the BBC said, quote, we apologize for the errors and thank you for your patience in waiting for this reply confirmation of corrections that were made in October 2023. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the side effects of the week.
Other serious stomach conditions may exist. Don't take if allergic to Voquezna or while on Rilpivirine. Serious allergic reactions include trouble breathing, rash, itching, and swelling of face, lips, tongue, or throat. Serious side effects may include kidney problems, intestinal infection, fractures, life-threatening skin reactions, low B12 or magnesium levels, and stomach growths. Tell your doctor about your medical conditions, medications, and if you have diarrhea, persistent stomach pain or fever, decreased or bloody urine, seizures, dizziness, irregular heartbeat, jitteriness, chills, shortness of breath, muscle aches or weakness, spasms of hands, feet, or voice.
My voice is fine. Now, just a final note of this smart world. Astronomers dreamed up a thing called the Vera Rubin Observatory in the 1990s. It was to scan the sky for stars and other stuff. But that was before the time of satellites orbiting Earth only 340 miles above the planet. Starlink internet satellites, chief among them. They're too bright not to interfere with the observations of the observatory. Vera Rubin, due to its wide field of view and exceptional sensitivity, was to feel their presence especially keenly. All of the characteristics that make this observatory amazing for surveying the whole southern sky also mean it's going to see a whole bunch of these satellites, says a research scientist for that observatory. The telescope is expected to open to the sky later this month. It has a 26-foot-wide mirror, one of the largest in the world. It's also fitted with the largest camera ever built for an astronomical telescope. SpaceX was initially talking about a constellation of 12,000 satellites, but now plans a fleet of 42,000 spacecraft. Other broadband operations like Amazon's Kuiper Network and the Chinese projects Guang, Quanfan, and Gi Space intend to launch tens of thousands of satellites of their own. Right now, there are about 10,000 satellites above the Earth. The number could increase to 100,000 in the next decade. Quote, it's unfortunate that this huge increase in the satellites is coinciding with the decade of Vera Rubin's operation, said Rawls of the observatory team. It's extremely frustrating. We are putting a bunch of stuff in orbit that's interfering with our views of the cosmos. And it's not just Starlink. In 2022, the American company AST Space Mobile began deploying a constellation of its Bluebird satellites, giant antenna arrays intended to provide 5G via satellite directly to smartphone users on Earth. They are insanely bright. So bright, in fact, that the telescope must plan for their passes in advance in order to avoid them. Such a smart world. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station. Ask your dad. Or whenever you want it on your audio device of choice, including Spotify, Deezer, and YouTube. And it would be just like being on YouTube, if you agree to be with me then. Hope you will. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Bam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. The email address for this show, your chance to get... What are these Cars I Talk t-shirts? And a playlist of the music heard here on, as well as a lot of stuff to watch, listen to, enjoy, be revulsed by... All at harryshearer.com, and I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. See you next week from New Orleans. I won't see you, you'll hear me. In the meantime, so long from the home of the homeless.